At the end of your life, what will be your legacy? What will you leave behind for future generations? For the world, join the world messenger, Isabella Lundberg. Each week as she brings you a new distinguished guest from the business, sports, or entertainment world to share their success, their struggles, and their lessons. They will share their insights into current hot topics that affect everyone. Isabella facilitates an intimate, vulnerable environment to find the true value of humanity and real leadership. Are you ready for your legacy? The legacy that matters?
Hello, hello, my beautiful friends. It's Isabella Lundberg here, the world messenger, and I'm inviting you for another epic episode of Legacy Leader Show. I am having today's guest with me to tackle the question of transformation and how that ties into so many aspects that I'm sure you are not even possibly considering this time, but you should. Today, let me introduce you to my great friend here from Denver, Colorado, who is joining us and who has been involved in so many different things. Former Marine, who is one of the top leaders in cybersecurity, also who is the vice president of OVASP organization that he will be sharing more about and where they're up to on the global scale and so much more. He's an instructor. He is a curious mind and creative mind that is doing so many great things in our community. And without further ado, let me introduce you, Frank Victory. Frank, how are you?
Good, good. Thank you so much for that great introduction.
You're absolutely welcome. Frank, we are literally on the cusp of tremendous transformation. It's happening in all facets. Do you mind sharing what that means to you and where do you see transformation occurring right now the most and what implication that has?
Well, I think that when we start talking about transformation, what is that driver behind it? Why are we doing that transformation? And in a field such as cybersecurity, I think we always have to keep transforming over and over again. We have to really, not just transformation, but more accurately, I would say, is evolution, right? We have to continue to evolve to become better than what we were. I've been in this industry for a long time, pretty much close to, almost three decades now. And the attacks that were happening and the things that were happening three decades ago, they're not even relevant now, right? I mean, they were so simplistic. They were able to, you know, the attacks and everything else compared to today's attacks where we are talking about real damage. We are talking about multi-vector type of attacks. We are talking about where they are not going for that short-term goal. They are playing the long game. They have huge strategies, everything along those lines. How are we going to keep evolving or transforming to meet and defend organizations against these type of attackers?
I love how you expanded on that and specifically where is the right now the highest vulnerability, which is around that security and security, not only on the physical level, but also on infrastructures that are operating businesses right now in a virtual setting. Obviously, as an instructor, as someone who teaches and who is the veteran in the industry, you touch transformation also on the very significant high profile projects, as well as obviously dynamics between team and talent. So do you mind sharing a little bit about implications that you see from the human nature, human side that is contributing adversely to that issue?
Okay, the human side, that's probably the biggest challenge that we have within the cybersecurity realm when we start talking about people, because it can play effect into a lot of different things. I think the most common thing is where we build up these cyber defenses and great things, but all it takes is one person clicking on a phishing email to allow somebody in. But I think that the human factor goes into a lot of different areas. So for example, fatigue and burnout, right? You know, obviously one of our first pivotal points for defense is going to be the SOC, of course, our Security Operations Center. And the biggest problem, or one of the biggest problems that the SOC runs into, is that everything they look at is negative. When we talk about a company and how they're doing, right? We think about, okay, well, they've made certain successes here. They've done this. They've done these great things. And however, the SOC only sees alerts, right? If something's working great, the SOC will never hear about it. The SOC will never go by because it's not an intrusion. The other part and the challenges for the people in the SOC is that if something goes great, let's say that they're by some weird margin, there are no cyber attacks, right? Or we do our job 100% correctly. Business goes on as normal. Well, let's remove the cyber secure. Let's say, again, we get into that area where there is no cyber attacks out there. The business goes on as normal, right? So, how does the SOC provide their value in there, right? Because, hey, we have been working tirelessly to protect this business so that it can operate as normal, right? So that they can do what they want. And in some ways, we are trying to stay invisible to the people that are making the business run. So, how do you, or how, that's another people factor that falls into place.
Yes. And this is obviously beyond just the SOC as a department. I'm seeing this across different departments, even sales and marketing, right? Or people that anything touches an organization, technology, which we cannot obviously live and operate in this modern age without it, that also can attribute to higher risk. But what I'm also seeing is a lack of understanding. What is my responsibility as an end user, right? And how do I exercise that, not only my rights, but also my responsibilities with? And a lot of gray area there. So, do you mind sharing some interesting aspects and stories? Because you're in the midst of that, not only through the numerous organizations and associations you're part of it, did you hear these horror stories and some of them that are so preventable? Like, for example, the story that we heard about what just happened with that automated upgrade that have half of the world paralyzed for a few days.
Sure. Well, I think the biggest thing that we have to try to understand is that the person working in marketing, the person that is working in human resources, the person that's working in sales, their job is just as important to them as our job is important to us. And they are trying to bring in revenue. They are trying to get the message out. They are trying to protect the people. And in order for them to do their job, everything has to work, right? They can't be under cyber attack. At the same time, they also have to make sure that they're protected against these threats. And they could see us as, quote, getting in the way of them, right? That they can't do certain things because security won't allow them to. When we talk about things like physical security, right? And we talk and we see the people that are coming into the field, and we think, well, why don't you do this? Why don't you do this? Right? I don't want to do this. That's an understandable threat, right? Don't go into a bad area of town. Don't leave your car unlocked, things along those lines. A lot of the attacks on cybersecurity are invisible, right? I mean, obviously, we have our tools so that we can see what the attacks are. But the standard typical user will not. And that's really, if we talk about the CrowdStrike outage that was, what, approximately about a month ago or something like that, and it
Yes.
took out, what, half the world, that is actually the perfect example of that invisibility. CrowdStrike has been in people's systems forever, right? I mean, they have probably been operating with that CrowdStrike for a long time, and the users never knew about it, right? They were protected about it. Obviously, there was a mistake that was made. There was a small issue, took down all their systems. And then, of course, it became visible. The problem, right now, especially in that situation, is that how do they, the first time that the user, the standard user, knew that they were being protected was, well, an outage. My system didn't work. I can't get, this booked. I can't get my job done. Oh, and, look at places with airlines. Oh, well, I can't get you on the plane. We can't launch the plane because the systems were out.
Yes.
And that, of course, had a snowball effect down the line, because if people can't move, that causes a bigger problem.
And we know that, but we cannot just anticipate that more similar problems will be taking place, that if we don't learn from these lessons and pivot and position, we're going to have more vulnerabilities that are going to be detrimental. And everybody that is watching and listening now need to also understand what's going to happen with CrowdStrike. Like, where are they going to be? Is they going to go out of the business? How much losses are they going to deal with? How much their coverage and insurance and policies is going to go up? Or if they end up to survive, right? It's like, what are they going to be also fully fledged responsible for, right? To their partners, to their organization and to their team, but also to their executive leadership and their board. And what implications of that would be?
Well, I don't think they're ever going to go out of business. I don't think that that's really an issue. Is the outage going to hurt them? Absolutely. Right. They are probably still cleaning up and will still be cleaning up this mess for a long time. Will they have to suffer penalties and issues? Yes, absolutely. However, working with somebody that and having experience using CrowdStrike, I can say that they are the best there is, right? They are one of the best products out there. They are well used. Their interface is normally right on. These attacks are stopped. Their detection mechanisms, everything along those lines, their product is top tier, right? So, will they survive? Absolutely. Can we survive without it? I don't think so, right? Mm-hmm. I don't think that the companies that have had CrowdStrike, I think it was like a couple of airlines, for example, could they actually just go remove CrowdStrike and replace them with somebody else? No, not very easily. And honestly, they would have more outages and more issues than they did when CrowdStrike had their outage, right? When they made their mistake. They would suffer more losses than that, because they replace them with somebody else, right? One, there's a change in stuff. There's going to be outages from, well, is it compatible with the server? Is it compatible with the application? Oh, now we have to teach our staff what to do. New skill set, right? I mean, getting a new product in is not always that easy, right? Because you have to bring a new skill set in. Will they have more issues as far as, well, okay, applications, things like that? But the other part I think is going to be a very big thing is the fact that, you know, what if they're not as good, right? I mean, CrowdStrike has spent a lot of time and a lot of effort in protecting their product. Do I think that there are other products that meet it as far as quality level? I don't think so, right? You know, I think that there are going to be companies, the other MDR platforms or XDR platforms that will try to take advantage of this, but I can't really see them succeeding. Right. I mean, there'll be some success. There'll be some people that are going to go and say, we're going to throw away CrowdStrike. And to me, that's a knee-jerk reaction on the company. And that's not a very good thing to do. Right. You have to really give it some thought. You have to go and say, well, before this outage, how many times did CrowdStrike give us a problem? Right. And, you know, we can apply this type of logic to anything. You know, I've worked in so many places where they want to go and replace a firewall because Checkpoint sucks, right? And so we're going to replace them with Cisco. And then a couple of years later, well, Cisco sucks, so we're going to replace them with Palo Alto.
Yes.
And it's a trend that keeps going on and on. But the thing about it is that when we talk about these firewalls, well, what did you do? Well, when you made the change? Well, we took the firewall rules and we just dumped them onto the new firewall. Did we audit? Did we do anything else with them? No, we don't have time for that. Do we know why those rules are there? No, we don't know, right? Okay, you just brought the same problems from one platform to the other. And again, when we talk about security transformation, it isn't the vendor, it isn't the hardware, it is our business logic that's there, and why is it there, right? What is that driver that's happening?
Mindset, the old concepts, right? It's like, and I love what you said, that it just changing from one platform to the next without looking what else needs to transform, what else needs to change, and how where the mistake is and getting the bottom of it, you're going to just replicate the same issues. So if you don't mind, I'm just curious now, since you mentioned like from CrowdStrike, they are so good, yet obviously this happens. So if that happens for the top echelon company that has great products and services, it's like, how is this even possible? What they need also transform beside, they got the technology concept, but what they did not get, it's that process and people, right? It's like, what did they automate? What do could they improve or should improve? And hopefully, what did they learn from it? So what would be some of this perfect case scenario for you or similar examples like them to say when that transformation happens is that we just cannot transform from technology environment, but overall organizational environment.
Well, I think I could tie that into the people factor that you mentioned earlier, right? I think that they did have a good process for approvals and everything else, but because they've done it so many times, it became just a second nature to them, and it became less and less important to them each time, or maybe too status quo for them. And maybe they didn't recognize the signs. But I think the biggest lesson, because I've had some time to think about this, why is CrowdStrike not following our standard process for deployment? So, for example, when we deploy patches out to systems, we don't apply them to every server out at once, right? We have a test group, we have certain areas, certain businesses to deploy our patches out to. Why did CrowdStrike push it to all the systems all at once? And that is not on CrowdStrike, though. That is on the receiving company. The receiving company should have created that plan and been control of that plan, not CrowdStrike. Now, should CrowdStrike have pushed that? Absolutely. But the decision, right, of what to do about it, that is going to be on the target company.
Thank you for clarifying that. And it's also very important to also understand when everybody say it wasn't me, right? Or there was them. And we often see the blame passed. It's what when leaders don't step in and don't take a responsibility, then it's impossible to see any possible positive change and definitely not long-term transformation that is required. And since transformation is huge component for things that also we're talking about here, where that level of vulnerability, where that risk is, where the opportunity for improvement is, I'm curious, what other examples that you think that are really great examples of how things have moved future and future focused and done well, on contrary.
Well, I think that, things that we've gotten better at, right? We've gotten better at recognizing threats. We've gotten better at realizing that threat actors, right, are not just coming after and stealing our data with a solid brute force attack. We are starting to learn their methodologies. We are starting to study them as well. And we are taking lessons that law enforcement has had for a long time, right? If we compare what we're doing now, these are the same thing that law enforcement have been doing for a long time, right? With standard criminals. They study the criminals. They do, things like I'm a big fan of the TV show Criminal Minds, where they study the criminals that are coming in, right? We're doing the same thing though, right? We're profiling. This attacker is going to do this. This is what they're probably going to come after. This is how we should do our defenses, right? Where the biggest hurdle that we have right now is how do we take that threat intelligence and apply it over to the defenders and then have the defenders be able to use that data to apply it to our defenses? Because while we're learning from standard law enforcement, it is not as simple as an equation, right? I mean, I think that law enforcement comparatively does not have the complexities that we do, right? Because of the biggest thing is that when law enforcement is chasing after a criminal, right? They are chasing after that criminal. They don't have to worry, though, about the business continuing, right?
Yes.
They could come in and say, okay, well, here's this perpetrator, and we're going to come into this business, or we're going to come in here and we're going to stop all traffic, right? Think about, unfortunately, we've had some around the area where I live where they could just, we blocked all traffic because there's a guy with a gun right here, right? And it's like, okay, we can't do that in business. We can't say, well, here's a threat, let's just shut down the business, right? That is not going to be acceptable. The business has to be able to continue and has to keep moving forward. And in our case, with the way that our businesses move, especially 24 by 7 by 365, we can't do it. I mean, look at the damage that, CrowdStrike, but that could have been a real attack too, right? What if we turn the CrowdStrike outage around and say, we remove CrowdStrike, whatever reason, CrowdStrike either stopped working, got around it, et cetera. That could have been a real attack. Why didn't the business know how to recover from it anyways? Right. Okay. Why, what is your IR plan? Because the companies that were completely down and down for a long time didn't have a good recovery plan. Right. And when we talk about what is it, the IR, the IR, the BC plan, they didn't have it.
I love what you said there because it's so interesting and fascinating that risks have been all-time high in modern time just because of the velocity of the everything that is happening at once, right? And at the same time, I remember early 2000s when we were talking about creating plans and testing them out before they occur, like how good is your risk, right? And the risk in concept. And if you don't have a plan, then you really are just absolutely going to act reactively. And I remember how many companies thought this is such a waste of time. And right now, how many of these planes don't get even fast enough created because the risks and the whole train of the sequences and events is just happening, and it is so explosive, has a, such a strong, obviously, implications and much more severe impact because of all of those elements we're talking about. So, what would you recommend for leadership that are really making these decisions, specifically where we see the most vulnerability, like in healthcare and financial industry? What would you suggest and recommend for them to really double down on?
Oh boy, that is a very hard question, right? Because, one of the things that working in offensive security, we always like to ask is talking to those leaders, what keeps you up at night? What are your five W's? What is the most biggest risk you have? And honestly, I don't think that's the best way to approach the question. I mean, the question is absolutely valid. I think that in being in offensive security, the first thing we need to do is understand the business. Healthcare is different from finance, right? Finance is going to be different from manufacturing, right? So the first thing that we as offensive security or even defensive security, right, the blue team, we have to do is understand is what the business is and what their goals are, right? What are going to be the biggest things? Because if we can align ourselves with healthcare, right, for example, and understand what healthcare is trying to accomplish specifically, then we're going to relate to them a little bit more and we can build better defenses. For example, when I was working for an insurance medical insurance company a long time ago, and one of their business tiers was pharmacy, right? Well, I can't go to the VP of pharmacy, who, by the way, she was a pharmacist as well as a VP, and say, well, what keeps you up at night? Right? Well, she's going to talk about What keeps her really up at night, right? I think there were a better question that I had was, what would happen if I could adjust somebody's medication, right? What if we all know that when we're talking about medication, it's going to be very specific. It's, 4 grams or whatever, whatever that dosage is. What if I adjusted someone's dosage or removed their dosage, right? Right. I mean, okay, well, there was a stoppage in doses. We canceled somebody's medication. That's going to be easy, right? I mean, that's going to be easy for somebody to recognize because, hey, I'm on prescription medication. If I went to the pharmacy and couldn't get it, I'm going to go find someone else that can get it for me. But what if the medication and the system that told the pharmacist changed their dosage without me knowing about it, right? Or we even the pharmacist knowing about it. They're, counting out their medication and everything else, even a little bit. That could cause everything down to, well, death, right? So,
Absolutely.
yeah.
The high risks, right? And I'm glad, I mean, of course, the industries are slightly different, but ultimately all businesses have the high regulations, right? And if those high regulated environments are also tremendously vulnerable and we don't have safeguards for that or not instituted properly, implications are much more detrimental and some of vulnerabilities are much higher over the other ones, right? But ultimately, one of the things that we're seeing is implications of the just as a result of the businesses on people. People, and not necessarily just that work in the business, but just the general public, right? And how is that affecting every day and implications of that?
Well, one of the exercises I had when I was working for a financial company, I started asking a question, one of the very hard questions to some of my peers was, how does a cybersecurity incident affect us from a business level? Can we measure and predict that impact? If we get compromised by something, right, by an attack,
Yes.
how does that hurt our business? And again, can that be measurable? If we look at the traditional cases, for example, we know that Target was breached, right? They're not obviously out of business. Is that predictable and is that measurable? Because if you can predict it, if you can measure it, that gives us as cybersecurity people more power to try to push and get these issues fixed and remediated. But what are the metrics that are you're going to use? How do you measure people's attitude towards you? How do you measure public trust? Can you measure public trust? Right? And that public trust is going to vary. If you're, since we're talking about a financial company, we have some people that may be investing and it may be a several thousand dollars. Okay. That public trust is going to be different from that person that's investing $1 million. That's two completely different things, right? The person that's doing $1 million, they're going to have absolute trust in you. And honestly, they're probably not even going to be worried about the safety, and they're not going to be worried about the security of the company because that's what they pay the company for, right? That's part of their fees. Their main thing is, well, I'm investing $1 million and this is what I'm doing, and I shouldn't have to worry about security.
Yes. Excellent points. Excellent points. So, Frank, when we look at all of this now that we had a chance to discuss and overall overarching goal of transformation and the future of the business, right? Specific sectors that we mentioned from healthcare to finance, then organizational transformation and end users from the team and different departments all the way to individual contributor. What would be one overarching advice for leaders as they're making decision for them to truly adjust and quickly correct some common patterns that you see? Because not only you're obviously teaching real life examples and being professor at universities? Do you also involved in wide range of the associations, including OVASP? And from that perspective, I know you privy with so much interesting data and statistics. And I would love for you if you can share that some of those, not only just trends, but really some urgent pressing things that needs to improve because will have a detrimental implications. And not everybody will be lucky not to just to get a financial slap or fine. Some businesses will be going out of the business of the magnitude of issues that it will be dealing.
Yeah. Well, that's a very hard question because the person that's working and those business leaders or those security leaders, one of the things that we have to realize is that they have their peers as well, and they have their management as well. When we talk about, of course, the CISO, of course, the Chief Information Security Officer, they're focused on that. But they are usually have to work. I mean, they can't make these decisions on their own. They can obviously make certain decisions about security, but they can't say, well, I need $5 million to go fix this problem and then just go spend the $5 million. There's going to be, you know, the CEO, the CFO that they have to speak to. They have to get that approvals. They might have to get approval from the board of directors. Who, right, the CFO is going to have security on their mind, but they're going to actually, of course, worry about the entire financial standpoint of the company, right? And from the CFO's perspective, I'm going to spend X number of dollars. I'm going to spend $5 million and get what from it, right? And when we talk about that number, it's like, okay, well, we're going to get $5 million to make sure that the business runs as normal. Well, the business was running normal as now. How do you justify that $5 million, right? Mm-hmm. That is why I did something very, very unpopular when I was talking about metrics. I said, let's report the real issues. Like, no, we can't have anything red on the board. We can't have anything yellow on the board. Okay, but then here's the problem. You're going to go over to the CEO, right? Eventually roll up to the CEO and say, we're going to need this money. We're going to need to hire 5 more people. And the CEO is going to look at the board and they're going to go, why? Everything's green. Everything's working positively. Why should I hire an entire new team, spend hundreds of thousands of dollars investing to get more green? Right? That doesn't make sense. Okay. But then they're like, well, that shows that we're not doing our job. If we have things that are yellow, that's showing that we're not doing our job. Right. That's why we need to buy the extra people. That's why we need the more technology. This is why we need this. You've got to build your case up there. You've got to show the risk. Showing it in yellow, again, yes, is that an issue? Yes. But showing over to the CEO, well, it's in yellow, and now this process is in risk, right? And try to put it in a term or put it in a term that CEO really does understand, right? And if we go back to the financial industry, what if they can't process their financial transactions? And we know in finance, speed is a key. What if we simply had a delay, right? You know, I mean, I'm not a stock trader, but I know that even in situations where, hey, 5 seconds can make a huge difference. 1 second can make a huge difference in stock trades.
Yes.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So you have to put it into that perspective for them, because simply saying it's yellow or red, yes, I understand the hesitation to put that in there, right? So you have to put it into a context and you have to do it quickly, right? As far as you can't spend 20 minutes explaining that to the CEO. You've got maybe 2 minutes and that's it.
But also you have to know what to present and be honest and transparent. And I love what that also brings another implication to know environments so well that you also transparently are addressing in a timely fashion, because ignoring those already symptoms and signs and pretending they are not there, it's going to set you off for not only higher risk, but much more detrimental implications that will be hard to correct later. And I just love, again, that however this might be challenging, doing the right thing and knowing that is the right thing, and leveraging data and analytics, as you mentioned, it's going to drive that phenomenally in the right direction. So if you don't mind, pivot for a second here as we are looking through also a lens that you've been exposed to just through OWASP. Do you mind, first of all, telling us what OWASP stand for? And also as a vice president of the branch here in Denver in Colorado, what do you see some of the also biggest opportunities and things that are going to really lead and help leaders to lead into future more successfully?
Sure. Well, OWASP, they've recently changed their acronym. It used to be Open Web Application Security Project. It's now Open Worldwide Application Security Project because they're trying to break out from being just a pure application security firm, their core web application. The Denver OWASP chapter, which I am the vice president of the Denver OWASP chapter, not of the Global Foundation, but the Denver OWASP chapter has always been focused on that. We've talked about web applications, of course, but we've also talked about digital forensics. We've talked about risk management. We've talked about network security. And the biggest thing that you're going to get from attending one of my meetings and coming to these meetups is a chance to network and talk to other professionals, right? We can read papers all day. We can attend classes all the time. But the biggest thing is to get feedback from other people. What worked? What didn't work? What other challenges did you have? Did you have the same challenges and how did you resolve them, right? That is going to be the biggest benefit from us. I mean, along with, of course, the technology guides. And the technology guides that we have, 100% free, right? The remediation guides, the testing guides, I mean, everyone knows the OWASP top 10, right? And it's a cool buzzword for everything. But what a lot of people don't know is that to get to that top 10, here is the testing guide. Are you vulnerable to the top 10 or any one of the top 10? Well, you don't know, you have to test it. And in our testing guide, it actually gives you all the way down to hands-on, this is what you should type in your application to find out. And these are the results that may show that you're either vulnerable or that you are protected. We have also got remediation guides. And in our remediation guides, we go with cheat sheets. We actually call them cheat sheets. And the slogan for those, right, is application security or security is hard. Cheat. Don't be afraid to cheat, to copy, to steal from other people, right? That's very common. I know that, well, it's actually a hard concept for me to get around because in other industries, like I'm involved with education, that's highly discouraged, right? That's, you steal from someone else in education, that's plagiarism, right?
Absolutely.
In cybersecurity, that should be encouraged. We should be sharing that information. And if you have a code or you have a process or you have a document that just all out works, share it, right? So, you know, OWASP, right? Everything that we have here in the Denver OWASP thing is completely free as far as our monthly meetups. We also have the annual Snowfrog Conference. We are spinning up the 2025 conference right now. And I think that from our attendee prices, they're unheard of, right? As far as things, because you go to attend a lot of these conferences, well, it'll be $500, $700, you know, $2,000. If you start talking about some of these SANS conferences, you're talking $7,000. Our conference prices are $100, maybe $150, right? Okay. The idea of that is so that everybody can attend. How do we accomplish that? Well, for one thing, the five people on the board, right? Myself, we got Vince Pascal, who's the president, and we've got several other members of the board, right? We make a grand total of zero for doing this, right? As far as payment goes, right? So, you know, that is how OWASP is able to offer those things is becoming a 100% volunteer board.
That's brilliant. And it's nice to see how community in not only technology space, it's coming together, but overall business, right? And in different sectors and different stages, and also with different skill sets to learn to exchange ideas and do things better. And I love that it's concept of sharing, concept of supporting, but also ultimately preventing all of those incidents to happen that we addressed earlier in our conversation. With that in mind, seems like you've been doing so many great things from your service in military and all the way now, obviously serving the communities at large. So I'm curious, what's the next in your bucket list and what would you like your legacy to be? What would you like to be known for?
Oh boy. Legacy and what's next in my bucket list? I don't know yet. I mean, I'm out exploring new opportunities right now. And again, to be honest, I don't know. But the one thing that I want in anything I do is to be effective, right? I don't want to be the check the box person. I don't want to be the person that just lets things slide and here you go. I want to be challenged, right? When people ask me what I'm good at chaos. I'm good at making chaos or taking chaos and churning it into a more standard process, right? As far as it's funny when he's talking about the bucket list and we talk about what am I going to do when I retire? I honestly couldn't imagine retiring from this, right? I mean, when people ask me about my career field, I was like, well, you know, being in this job, it's not a job. In fact, a lot of ways, it's not even a career. This is almost a way of life, right? Because we live it. We love what we do. Okay? The people that I work with, the people that I associate myself with, they love this stuff. I mean, yes, it's their job. It's also their hobby, right? We go to these conferences and we are there at these conferences, you know, not the standard, what, 5, 8 hours. We're there till, you know, 2 a.m. sometimes, right? Having fun, hanging out with the people that have like interests, and we're doing things. Right. I mean, I love going to the DEF CON conference. When I go, I don't think I've ever been back to my hotel room before, let's say, you know, midnight. That's the earliest. Because we're having fun, right? We're enjoying ourselves.
That's great when you find the passion and when it's not then felt like a work, but also continues to keep your curiosity, creativity alive, and as a result, creates tremendous successes. In closing, Frank, do you mind sharing with the audience one thing that was so instrumental for you that you attribute your success? What was that?
Boy, my success. I think it's, you know, meeting other people with passion, right? And knowing these things. I have a great mentor. His name's Andy Lewis. And I have to tell you, he is the best guy ever. He's a mentor. He has helped driven me out there. And he has been instrumental in making me the career professional that I am, right? He is inspiring to a lot of people. And the best thing about it is that he's taught me how to be a good mentor to other people, right?
Thank you for listening to Legacy Leader Show. If you enjoyed the content and had a positive experience, then please leave us a positive rating. In addition, leave us a positive review whenever you are listening on whatever platform there might be. Make sure your friends and family also know about the benefit and value that we provide and what we have to offer. Cheers.